and we passed Proposition 71 to fulfill the promise of stem cell research and to make California a global leader in this important healthcare effort.
That's California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger announcing the passage earlier this month of Proposition 71. It's a bill in California that would fund, with California tax dollars to the tune of $3 billion plus, embryonic stem cell research. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in this evening. We're going to be talking about a brave new world, a world that is certainly brave, brave to the point of being foolhardy, a world that is filled with new technology, with new ideas, with many promises. Many, many promises of cures, many promises of a better world, a better humanity. Well, is this brave new world the kind of world that we want to live in, and what shape has it taken? We're going to be talking with Wesley Smith of the Discovery Institute about that in just a few minutes. Issues Etc. is a live call-in program. Write this number down and give us a call in the next 2 hours, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. We have an in-studio email address. Feel free to use it, issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Wesley Smith is a regular guest here on the program. He's a senior fellow for the Discovery Institute, an attorney for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide, and author of several books, including his latest, A Consumer's Guide to a Brave New World. Wesley, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Good talking with you again.
Well, you take the title of your book from the title of a book written at the beginning of, or near the beginning of the 20th century, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. What do you see the future in this book from almost 100 years ago?
You know, it's very interesting. Brave New World, the novel, was written and came out in 1932, and Aldous Huxley wrote about a society that had lost its humanity. And this was fiction, but it was a warning, a prophetic warning. And he, for example, many of your listeners, who I'm sure have read the novel, families no longer exist because children are hatched in hatcheries, and there's cloning, and there's genetic engineering so that you have a eugenic set of caste systems, alphas, omegas, epsilons, where people not only are programmed to be in a certain strata of society, but like where they are. And I came across a 1946 version of the novel in which Huxley wrote a new foreword. And he said that in this foreword, which I quote in the opening of the book, that when he wrote the novel initially, he thought it would take 600 years to get to the dystopian future that he warned against. And then in the 1946 preface, he said, "I'm afraid it's going to be here in a century." And what I decided in writing Consumer's Guide to a Brave New World is to look into those concepts, those ideas. And I imagined, what would it be that if Huxley had written a prequel, had gone back in time from the fictional place where he wrote of, to the technologies that led to the place where we no longer had a real human society, and where families were gone, and where the entire meaning of human life had been distorted and destroyed. And it struck me that it could be very well the kinds of arguments we're having today, where in the name of medical advances, we are beginning to consider quite literally changing human life at the molecular level. And these changes will have tremendous sociological impact, and will change our perception of indeed what it means to be human. I mean, nothing could be more important. I think we have two really huge issues facing us today. One, of course, is the jihad. And the second is are these brave new world technologies, and whether we're going to be able to put reasonable parameters around biomedical research, or whether we're just going to fall off an ethical cliff into a bioanarchy in which anything goes.
Now, when you talk about reasonable parameters around biomedical research, a lot of people would chime in with that, Wesley. They'd say, sure, we're talking about reasonable parameters, but their parameters would include things like the so-called therapeutic cloning, whereby people, humans, are cloned, not to the point for reproduction or, as you say, replication, but so that we could harvest the clone's stem cells. Or perhaps, if we're a little brighter and a little farther along, harvest organs. And We could put reasonable parameters around this, some say. How do you respond?
Well, already things are collapsing. I have a piece that I believe will be coming out either in tomorrow's or Tuesday's Daily Standard, which is the weekly standard online. And I've been reviewing the proposals in many state legislatures, most recently one in Illinois. And most people still think, and the media certainly reports this controversy, as if it still existed as it did during the first 6 months of the Bush administration's first term. You'll recall the embryonic stem cell debate fight. That was the first public policy controversy of the Bush presidency. And Senator Kerry often talked about a ban on the research, and of course that is not true. The fight over embryonic stem cell research had to do with federal funding. And the issue was whether or not the federal government should fund research that destroyed embryos. Embryonic stem cell research destroys embryos. There's a law that preexists this technology called the Dickey Amendment, and it is illegal under the Dickey Amendment, which was in place in 2001, and was in place in 1998 when embryonic stem cells were first derived in Wisconsin. And that's why President Clinton didn't fund the research. And at that time, without going back over that controversy, what the biotechnologists were saying was, all we want, if you'll recall, Todd, is leftover IVF embryos that are going to be thrown out anyway, right? They said, we don't want anything other than that. Look, these embryos are going to be tossed out. We might as well get some good use out of them. That was the argument that was made. Since then, although the media hasn't reported it, what big biotech wants is not only the right to clone embryos and take embryonic stem cell research, but in many state legislatures, and now in New Jersey, it is the law that biotech should be able to clone new human life, implant these embryos into women's wombs, and gestate them through the ninth month. That is the law of New Jersey today. There is a law pending in Illinois, a legislation that has not yet passed, that would do the same thing. There was legislation in Delaware that would have done the same thing that failed. So the idea that there are reasonable limits and they only want embryos left over from IVF, that's long gone. It's still talked about by the media, but they're not paying attention to what's really happening at the state level.
Wesley, with only a few minutes here before we take our first break, make a distinction for us. Is all stem cell research, does it all involve human cloning? Does it all have these serious ethical problems?
No, and again, one of the reasons I wrote Consumer's Guide to a Brave New World is to describe these issues in ways that people can understand them. Stem cell research per se is unobjectionable. I don't know of anybody who objects to stem cell research, because most stem cell research that's going on is non-controversial. It's called adult stem cell research, umbilical cord blood stem cell research. Right now, adult stem cell research, that is using tissues of our own bodies as medicine, has advanced tremendously in the science to the point where in human trials, there are human trials going on or have gone on with regard to Parkinson's disease, heart disease, multiple sclerosis, tremendous breakthroughs going on in Portugal using olfactory tissue, which is tissues at the back of the nose that are rich in stem cells and nerves, to bring treatments to people with quadriplegia of the kind that Christopher Reeve had. There's been testimony in the United States Senate that the media just doesn't report. In fact, I could read it to you if you're interested in it, if we have time before the break.
You've got about 2 minutes here, Wes.
All right, then let me read you some very interesting testimony that the media is not doing their job, so we'll do it for them, right? This is a woman named Laura Dominguez, and her testimony July 14, 2004, before the Senate Commerce Subcommittee on Science, Technology, and Space. She went to Portugal to get this adult stem cell research from her own olfactory tissue. She was quadriplegic. She still is quadriplegic. Here's what she testified to. Now, it has not come out in peer-reviewed journals, so we can't say it's happened, you know, in terms of science yet. But I don't think you can just say, well, we'll just disregard this woman's testimony. Here's what she said. The surgery involved the removal of tissues from my olfactory sinus area and transplanting it into my spinal cord at the injury site. After the surgery, I returned to California to continue physical therapy. I stayed there until July of 2003, blah, blah, blah. At that time, an MRI was taken, and it revealed my spinal cord had begun to heal. approximately 70% of the lesion now looked like normal spinal cord tissue. I was also starting to regain feeling in my upper body, and within 6 months I had regained feeling down to my abdomen. Can you imagine how wonderful it must be for her to have been paralyzed from the neck down and to begin to be able to feel her body again? She goes on, improvements in my sensory feelings have continued until the present time. I can now feel down to my hip level and have started to regain feeling and some movement down to my legs. My upper body has gained more strength and balance. Another one of the most evident improvements has been my ability to stand and remain standing using a walker and with minimal assistance. When I stand, I can contact my quadriceps and hamstring muscles. I can also stand on my toes when I am on my feet. And more importantly, while lying down in a prone position, I'm able to move my feet.
Wesley, let's take a break here. When we come back, I'd like to hear the rest of that woman's testimony before Congress. And I would like our guest, Wesley, to explain the significance of this. These steps forward, not the promises made by those who are calling for embryonic stem cell research that would cost the life of an embryo for the harvesting of its stem cells, but adult stem cell research showing genuine promise, proving genuine promise, with our foot, one foot in the brave new world and one foot in its prelude. We're talking with Wesley Smith tonight on Issues Etc. Our call-in number is 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you to pay the production salaries and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin asking you to prayerfully consider making a financial gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You can donate by credit card, 1-800-737-0172. Or you can donate by check, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Next week on Issues Etc., we're going to discuss Scripture alone with James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. While Roman Catholics often placed the authority of Scripture alongside the authority of tradition, many evangelicals are placing the authority of Scripture right alongside the authority of their own experience. Can we trust the accuracy, the authority, the authenticity of God's Word itself, of God's Word alone? We'll talk about it next week on Issues Etc. with James White. Now, if you'd like to know what we'll be discussing for the rest of November, just visit our website, issuesetc.org. While you're there at the website, by the way, be sure to check out our Issues Etc. books of the month for November, Faithfully Parenting Teens and Faithfully Parenting Preschoolers. These are great resources to help guide parents through today's postmodern world as they raise their children young and older. Now, you can purchase Faithfully Parenting Teens and Faithfully Parenting Preschoolers by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. The cost of each book is $9.99 plus shipping and handling, 1-800-325-3040. When you call or write, tell them that you listen to Issues Etc. and that you'd like our Issues Etc. book of the month for November, Faithfully Parenting Teens and Faithfully Parenting Preschoolers, 1-800-325-3040. We're talking about bioethics this evening. Wesley Smith is our guest. Wesley, you were reading from some testimony in Congress from a woman who had benefited greatly, and it is amazing to hear the benefits that she derived from adult stem cell and the research that's being done with adult stem cells. Someone says, look, we got all these, we've made the case here for the promise of adult stem cells. Why not take a two-track approach and do the embryonic stuff where there might be some promise and do the adult stuff together, and maybe we could arrive at better cures for people like this? Along those two tracks, what's the problem?
the embryonic stem cell research is going forward. Nobody has made it against the law. The question is, where do we put our resources, which are limited, and don't we want to put them where they will do the most good? Now that California, as you pointed out at the top of the show, has really jumped off a fiscal cliff and borrowed $3 billion over the next 10 years, and it will cost us, I'm from California, it'll cost us $6 billion when you include interest. And by the way, that's all going to go into human cloning research and embryonic stem cell research. This idea of embryonic stem cells is is more of a subterfuge than an actuality. The real goal here is human cloning. And that is the issue, that is the technology that I believe we must prevent. Because human cloning opens the door to genetic engineering, it opens the door to treating children as an item of manufacture, it opens the door to creating human life to be born, but for the purpose of using it as a thing, as a commodity, as a natural resource like a soybean crop to be harvested. It opens the door to a new eugenics in which we will be looking to enhance the human race and create, and there is even a social movement now called transhumanism, where coming out of the highest universities that literally seek the creation of a post-human species. And I urge your listeners, if they're in front of a computer, do a Google search of transhumanism, and you will go to a lot of material that will verify what I'm talking about. And it's not that I'm so worried that the transhumanist agenda will actually be able to be done scientifically, but what concerns me is that they are explicitly stating that being a human being is not what matters morally. And that indeed is what is at stake in these agendas. Does being human matter in terms of moral worth? Or to put it another way, does life have intrinsic moral value simply and merely because it's human? If we say yes to that question, then we won't treat nascent human life or postborn human life as a thing, as a commodity. And we will pursue a vigorous scientific research to look for medical treatments and cures and knowledge. But if we say no, that being human is irrelevant, then moral value becomes a matter of who has the power to decide. And increasingly in bioethics and bioscience, they're answering no to that question. And what they're saying is what matters is having sufficient consciousness to warrant moral worth. And those human entities that have less consciousness or less cognitive capacity to warrant that moral worth can be used as mere things.
Who would that include, Wesley?
That would not only include Terry Schiavo. In my documents that I put out here, and I do this, I footnote my presentations because I want people to understand that what I'm saying does not come from, you know, bad dreams at night. It comes from a great deal of effort and time and research, seeing what is being advocated and what is being done. And this is in terms of the using born people with serious cognitive incapacities as a harvestable crop. The idea is to get their organs. And this is from, and this is certainly not the only one either, this is from Critical Care Medicine 2003. Critical Care Medicine is the medical journal for the docs who do intensive care work. This is Establishment Medicine with a capital E. This is not Joe's medical journal on the Internet. And this is an article called The Role of Brain Death and the Dead Donor Rule and the Ethics of Organ Transplantation. Now, that's kind of a boring title, but what they're asking for or asserting, these two Harvard doctors, is anything but boring. It is alarming. Here's what they say, quote, "We propose that individuals who desire to donate their organs and who are either neurologically devastated, which could include Terry Schiavo, or imminently dying, should be allowed to donate their organs without first being declared dead." In other words, as we are saying that cloned human life, embryonic human life, and by the way, if you think that this agenda in terms of being able to do research on clones is going to stick with early embryos, I've got a bridge in the San Francisco Bay I want to sell you, because it's going to keep moving and moving into the later and later stages as the science develops. But if we can treat them, those unborn lives, as things, as crops, then, because they're not considered what's called persons in bioethics, then can we also treat born so-called human non-persons based on their lack of cognitive capacity? And that you now see in this quote I gave you from Critical Care Medicine, and that many in bioethics and transplant medicine are saying yes. And so what's at stake, Todd, and I'm saying this with all deliberation, is the sanctity of human life ethic. Are we going to treat humans as subjects, or are we going to treat some of us as objects? And nothing could be more important.
We're talking with Wesley Smith. Wesley, before we go to this break with a minute and a half, just fill us in. You've mentioned the name twice, Terry Schindler Schiavo, she might be known as to our listeners. Just give us her story as briefly as possible,
right,
with only a minute and a half.
Sure. Terry Schiavo is a young woman, and certainly not the only woman in this condition in this country, who's been the subject of a very bitter fight in Florida about whether her feeding tube should be removed. And without going into the details, it's a fight between her husband, who wants her to die, and her parents, who want her to live. And the reason you would take away somebody's food and water this way, and so that she dies slowly over a period of 14 days, is because she's been dehumanized. People call her a, quote, vegetable. Well, I think when you start calling people a vegetable, you're saying that they're no different than a carrot. And I don't think we should ever assume that any human being is a mere organic a piece of fruit, you know?
Folks, you can read several articles written by our guest in this hour, Wesley Smith, on the web at WesleyJSmith.com, WesleyJSmith.com. While you're there, check out his great new book. It's called A Consumer's Guide to a Brave New World, WesleyJSmith.com. We'll get to your phone calls after this break, 1-800-730-2727. The best callers tonight will get a copy of this book, A Consumer's Guide to a Brave New World by Wesley Smith, 1-800-730-2727. Now, when we come back, we need to talk about the kind of the philosophical, the ethical foundations beneath this brave new world, where we find ourselves poised to enter. There's an ethic called utilitarianism. We'll need to explain that. And also, a philosophy behind much of what's going on in big biotech. Wesley calls it scientism. It's called scientism by others. The ideology of science. Now, there's nothing wrong with science, folks. There's nothing wrong with it. But when it takes on the aura, when it takes upon the tenor and the authority of a religion, then there's a serious problem, and we'll talk about that when we come back from this break. 1-800-730-2727. Wesley Smith is an attorney for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide. We'll be right back. Someone once spoke some of the most comforting words I have ever heard as a parent. This person said, "God loves your children more than you do." Raising children can be complicated and confusing for parents. How do we raise our children rightly? How do we help our children remain faithful Christians in the grace given them by Christ in their baptism? The Issues, Etc. book of the month for November is called Faithfully Parenting Teens. This book offers godly advice and a Christ-centered, forgiveness-centered approach to parenting. You can order Faithfully Parenting Teens by calling Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040. You can also browse before you buy at our Issues Etc. website, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section for Faithfully Parenting Teens, our Issues Etc. book of the month for November.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Todd Wilkin here again. I'm talking with the author of our Issues, Etc. book of the month for November, Faithfully Parenting Teens, Pastor John Buca. Pastor Buca, what do you mean by faithfully parenting?
Parenting so often is really dealt with, you deal with as parents' successes and failures, and more often than not, as a parent, you realize that failures are part of what it means to be a human being. Rather than being successful, the more important task here is to be faithful to God's call, to be a faithful parent, to raise your child up in the way that God wants you to raise him or her up. And then on top of that, faithfully parenting means that I'm going to make a commitment as a parent to be home in the village. The African proverb says it takes a village to raise a child, but there's nobody home in the village more often than not. And we as parents and we as church educators and we as pastors and parishioners need to be home in that village for our children. That's why we need to be faithful to that task.
So what are the unique challenges facing parents today?
I think the unique challenge for a parent is to make sure that they continue to give their child the gift of their presence, not TS, but S-E-N-C-E-S. And by that, I mean that the greatest temptation for me as a parent is to believe that my child needs more programs, from soccer to basketball to golf to dance to hockey to Boy Scouts to Girl Scouts. I can overly program my child from morning to night. In fact, I believe we're raising overly committed kids. The theological faith problem with that, however, is that to teach our kids to be committed to everything is to allow them to forget about the only commitment that's important, and that's their commitment to God and the faith that God has given them. Therefore, I think that's the greatest challenge. And also the secondary challenge is to believe that I can do this parenting on my own. I don't need God's help, nor do I need anybody else's help. And that I'm embarrassed if I confess that I don't know everything. You know, it's a self-sufficient, self-reliant world in which we live. That runs contrary to our Christian faith. We're called to rely on Jesus. We're called to rely on the community of believers. And we're all in this together as baptized Christians.
Order Faithfully Parenting Teens by calling 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org. Professor Rick Neufer of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
God calls men of all ages to serve as his pastors. As the coordinator of the Alternate Routes to Ordination program at Concordia Theological Seminary, I am privileged to work with many older men who desire to serve the Lord in the ordained ministry. The Alternate Routes program provides a way in which experienced laymen, teachers, principals, DCEs can receive seminary training in a shorter period of time than in the Master of Divinity program. Although no degree is awarded in the Alternate Routes program, Alternate Routes students still serve a vicarage as part of their program and receive all the theological education they will need for ordination. The churches of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod are filled with people of all ages. Thus, the church needs pastors of all ages.
For more information, call Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155. Folks, here's a way that you can help us defend life from beginning to end. It's the Issues Etc. Reformation Club, our monthly donor program. Now, there are three different levels of giving, a year-end gift of $250 or a monthly gift of $25, a year-end donation of $500 or a monthly donation of $50, or a year-end gift of $1,000 or a monthly contribution of $100. And as a token of our thanks, we'll send you items like monthly tapes, books, and transcripts of the program. For more information on our Reformation Club, go to our website, issuesetc.org, click on the What's New section, or you can see page 11 of the latest Issues Etc. journal. Now, you can make your first gift by credit card. Our resource line number, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172, or by check, just write us at Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can also donate online right there at our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You'll find a way to donate online. Help us reach our goal of 100 members for our Issues Etc. Reformation Club by the end of this year. We're talking about bioethics with Wesley Smith, a senior fellow with the Discovery Institute and attorney for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide, and author of several books, including his latest, A Consumer's Guide to a Brave New World. Wesley, you talk a lot about big biotech. You've already used the term here several times in the shortest part of our conversation. What do you mean by big biotech? And talk, if you would, about the profit and the patent motive behind much of what we've discussed so far.
Right. There's a huge biotech industry that has had $100 billion invested into it over the last 20 years. And most, I have to say, of biotechnology, which is using technology and then cellular and genes and living tissues as products is not controversial. Let me give you an example. They are developing cancer drugs that would be tailor-made for each of our genetic makeups so that if you and I had the same kind of cancer, your drug would be somewhat different than that you receive, say, for chemotherapy than mine. And I think that's just fabulous, and nobody thinks that's controversial. What we're talking about in these cloning and stem cell debates is just a small corner of the biotech industry, but it is a crucial corner because what we find happening is that in the drive to hopefully make billions, literally billions of dollars, the biotech industry and biosciences generally have basically declared that they are not going to be subject to any limits in the kinds of research that they're going to do. That the only limit that they've agreed to for now, and it is just for now, is on reproductive cloning. And the only reason they're agreeing to that, or actually there are two reasons. Number one is it's politically necessary that they do so. But number two is it's not safe. All cloned mammals practically that have been created so far through somatic cell nuclear transfer, and I think we should probably slow down and start describing what some of these technologies are, have been born defective. And so there's no reason to believe that you could try now to create a cloned baby and not have terrible, terrible outcomes because of these defects. But other than that, and as I said, based on the state legislation that's going on, they're very clear. They are not going to accept any limits unless the democratic processes force it upon them. And yet these technologies have the potential to literally change human nature at the molecular level and to change what it means to be human. And therefore, each and every one of us has a crucial stake in all of these biotech issues, but particularly the cloning and genetic engineering issues and embryonic stem cell issues, because cloning comes out of embryonic stem cells, which I can explain why that is if you'd like.
Folks, we're going to be taking your phone calls here. If you're getting a busy signal right now, please stay on the line, keep trying, because we're going to be freeing up our phone lines in just a moment with Wesley Smith, 1-800-730-2727. Wesley, a lot of people in line would like to talk.
Sure.
Rana is on the line calling from Palo Alto, California, listening on KFAX. Rana, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you very much. Could you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, Rana.
Oh,
how are you?
Good. Hi, good. Thank you. You know, in all the campaign literature that came out prior to the election, they mentioned Alzheimer's would benefit, and now the people at Stanford University are having forums, and they're just giddy, and they keep reading in the newspaper Alzheimer's. I thought that was a whole brain disorder that no stem cell research would benefit.
Good question, Rana.
That's a very good question, and it demonstrates, Rona's correct, it demonstrates that the incredible hype and the unfair coverage that this issue has received. When Ronald Reagan died, you may recall, there was almost this ghoulish jumping forward by the biotech industry and by biotech proponents, many of them who are, you know, in good faith but misguided about what the science can do. And they were saying, oh, if only Ronald Reagan could have had embryonic stem cell therapies, he would have been cured. Now, a lot of us who've been fighting these political battles over these technologies know and knew that Alzheimer's was actually not a disease likely to be cured by embryonic stem cells or adult stem cells for that matter, because as Rona said, it is a whole brain disease. It's not a cellular disease such as Parkinson's, which may yield to these kinds of stem cell therapies. But at least the Washington Post told the story in a very important article called Stem Cells, an Unlikely Therapy for Alzheimer's, which is dated June 10th, 2004. The byline is Rick Weiss. Rick Weiss is the science writer at the Post. He's very pro-biotech. He has even implied that people such as myself who oppose human cloning are akin to the Taliban. So this is not somebody with an axe to grind against stem cell research or embryonic stem cell research. But he wrote as a good journalist, a very good story here. And it turned, he asked these scientists, why aren't you correcting the misimpression that is really widespread out there? And when I speak around the country and I ask, how many of you have been told that, you know, stem cells will help Alzheimer's? And usually the whole room raises their hands. excuse me, I have a slight cold here. When he asked scientists, why aren't you correcting this misimpression? Here's what one said. A Ronald D.G. McKay, who is a stem cell researcher at the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke. Listen to this. He said, to start with, people need a fairy tale. Maybe that's unfair, but they need a storyline that's relatively simple to understand. Now, think about that. Think about the hubris and the arrogance and the sheer cruelty of allowing people with family members who have Alzheimer's to believe that this somehow these embryonic stem cells are going to come marching to the rescue. It's outrageous, and that is why we've not had a really reasoned debate about these issues. Proposition 71 was not passed because of a reasoned debate, but because the people who support it have had $25 million. They put pictures of children in wheelchairs on television saying that these things can cure it, and they didn't tell people that what they had created for themselves was a constitutional right to engage in human cloning. And the idea of human cloning as a widespread medical therapy, you know, there's another bridge in the San Francisco Bay, I'll sell you, if you think that's going to happen, because the resources necessary to make millions and millions of human cloned embryos, which we can get into what the technology would be, just aren't going to be there. In fact, will lead to the exploitation of women, which is why many feminists oppose cloning.
Ronna Kohlback, I'm going to send you a copy of Wesley's new book, A Consumer's Guide to a Brave New World, 1-800-730-2727. Up next, David is calling from Falls Church, Virginia, listening on WAVA. David, welcome to Issues Etc. David, welcome. All right, let's talk with Anna, who calls from Kansas City. Anna is listening on KCCV. Hi, Anna. Welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi. I just have a comment. My husband and I had struggled with infertility for several years, and we just adopted 10 embryos from the Snowflake organization. And I think a lot of times people forget to mention that there are many people out there that want to adopt these embryos.
Anna, thank
Anna,
you.
I'm really glad you called. I do discuss snowflakes in my book, and I interviewed some snowflake donors and snowflake adopting parents. What Snowflakes is doing is putting people together who have used in vitro fertilization and have excess embryos, but rather than throw them away, they want them to become born babies, which is why they were created. And there are other families who have been unable to have children who are willing to have these embryos implanted. And to date, I think about 50 or 60 babies have been born through this program that would have otherwise never been born because they probably would have been tossed away.
Let's go to the phones again, and we'll get a call in here. We might have to cut our answer in half because a break is coming up here. Wesley,
sure.
Marlene in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin, listening on WGNV. Marlene, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
Hello.
Yeah, I have a question. I don't know how. Do you think that the scientists maybe someday will lie and say it's the adult stem cells when really they might be using the embryo? I'm thinking, will they lie about saying it's the babies that are doing it, but they'll do it?
Yeah, the other way around.
Does that make sense, what I just said?
Yeah, what you're
will
scientists use adult stem cells and say they're embryonic, is what you're asking, right?
Yeah, to show success, I think that's the gist of her question.
There has been, I wouldn't say that they would necessarily, well, there actually has been some lies in the science community to win this political debate. But in a peer-reviewed study, that wouldn't work. However, in the media, there has been a great deal of mixing of terms. You know, you hear stem cell research as if it's embryonic stem cell research. Stem cell research is everything. So if you have a breakthrough that's based on adult stem cells, they'll say stem cell breakthrough. If it's embryonic stem cell, they'll say embryonic stem cell breakthrough. The issue is to try to make people think that the embryonic has all of the potential. When based on the published science to date, what we're finding is that alternative sources, adult and umbilical cord blood stem cells, as I said, are already treating serious human afflictions
contending
in
for
early
truth
human studies.
In an age,
we'll be right back.
Anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you enjoy listening to Issues Etc. on the weekends, did you know that you can listen to 12 new hours of Issues Etc. each week on the internet? All you have to do is go to our website, issuesetc.org, click the worldwide KFUO logo, and there you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7, including 12 new programs weekly. The website address again, issuesetc.org.
Issues Etc. is looking for one member from each Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregation to become our official lay representative. Responsibilities simply involve promotion of Issues Etc. in your local church. Now, if you're interested, leave your name, phone number, and mailing address, and your congregation's name, city, and state on our automated resource line, 1-800-737-0172, or email us at issuesetc@kfuo.org. Join Issues Etc., the faculty of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and pastors and lay people from throughout the world for the 2005 Symposia Series at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne. It all takes place January the 18th through the 21st at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. We'll be broadcasting there during this Symposia Series. For a complete list of speakers, a symposia schedule, or to register online, just go to the What's New section of our website, issuesetc.org. That's the 2005 Symposia Series, January 18th through the 21st at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne. We do have some open phone lines now, 1-800-730-2727. Wesley Smith is our guest. Let's go back to the phones in Napa, California, listening on KFAX. Grace is on the line. Grace, welcome.
Thank you. Wesley knows me. He represented me at an HMO Ethics Committee meeting
Hi,
in April
Grace.
Of 99. Hi, you dear man.
Oh, how are you, sweetie?
Oh, I'm fine. I heard you last week that you were going to be on. I've called 8 of my friends.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well, thank you, Grace.
I've really tried to think this thing through. I voted no because I didn't feel California had the money. That was basically it. And I did believe that life began at conception, but I've recently believed that life doesn't begin at conception. But I don't feel that's true. I believe it begins at implantation, when the embryo has a life source and a bloodline. Because every month, the mother discards an ovum or partially an embryo, possibly, that's defective. And so these embryos are in petri dishes. That's where the wrong is created in starting life, which is God's deal, you know, to start life. And but being that they're there, they have a shelf life, and they're more or less just the stem cells. They don't have life unless they're implanted. And I feel they're comparable to organ transplants.
All right, Grace, let's see if we can deal with some of that. First of all, let's deal with the definition of when life begins, because she raises this, and I would like to see if you can correct a bit of the misconceptions that may be at work here. She talked about life beginning at implantation. Nowadays, you'll hear people say, Wesley, you know this as well as I do, well, life begins at conception, but conception's been redefined to not be conception or fertilization, but to be fertilization and then implantation.
Well, biologically, and the only way we can say for sure when life begins is biologically. And biologically, life begins at conception, because that is when a new human organism comes into being. It has its own genetic makeup. It has its own gender. It is an individual human life. And that genetic makeup doesn't change from the time of the first cell of the embryo to the time when we die. Now, does that mean that the issue is won? That depends on somebody's morals and their ethics. See, these are not science debates. They're moral and ethical debates. But in terms of whether or not an embryo outside a womb is human life and an embryo inside a womb is not human life and an embryo inside a womb is human life, then you're saying that geography is what counts as opposed to the biological actuality of that organism. If you took an embryo in a Petri dish, and you took one, if you could find it, which of course you can't, in the woman at the same stage, they'd be identical. And I don't see why, if an embryo is 1 week along in a Petri dish, is not human life, then it's implanted, then it is human life. That's not science. That is, I love Grace. She's a sweetie. But she's trying, you know, we're trying to find ways to justify things that we want morally when perhaps based if we believe that life begins at conception and that morally matters. See, that's the issue. Does that morally matter? But in terms of these embryos left over from IVF, again, that is not where this is about. That is not what this is about. What has happened since 2001, and I have to reemphasize this, is that the biotech industry has moved away from, although they still talk about it, wanting these embryos for research, and they're now moving into human cloning. Proposition 71 was primarily a legalization of human cloning research in the state of California and providing $3 billion to pay to learn how to do that research. Why do they need to do human cloning? Embryos from IVF in terms of medical treatments have two major problems. The first one is they cause tumors. And you know, you don't hear this much in the media, but they cause tumors. And that's why you can't use them in humans at this point. That's one of the reasons. The second one is that if you took a leftover IVF embryo, and Grace mentioned organ transplants, you'd have the exact same problem if you used an IVF embryo that you would have with an organ transplant. That is tissue rejection. And that's because the IVF embryo stem cells would not be genetically matched to the patient. And so the patient would probably have to take strong drugs to suppress the immune system in the same way that organ recipients do. One of the ways out of this that biotechnologists are looking for is called therapeutic cloning. And this is what Ron Reagan pushed at the Democratic Convention, although he was saying it was embryonic stem cell research. In therapeutic cloning, let's say I'm the patient, Todd. In therapeutic cloning, you take a clone of me, develop the embryo that results from that, and I'd like to describe how that works in just a second. Develop the embryo that would result from making a clone of me to the one-week stage, take out the stem cells, and then use those for treatment, and the idea is that I would not reject those tissues. And that's why cloning, embryonic stem cell research with IVF embryos, is the gateway to human cloning, and human cloning is the technology that leads to Brave New World. How is human cloning done? This is how Dolly the sheep came into being.
Let's talk about this for about 1 minute here, because I got a final question for you too, Wesley, before we wrap this hour up.
Okay, I can't. All right, somatic cell nuclear transfer. You take a human egg, you take out the nucleus. You take a skin cell, you take out the nucleus. Let's say my skin cell. You put it into where the egg nucleus used to be, and now the modified egg has 46 chromosomes. If you zap it with electricity, and if it works, a new human life would come into being. This is called somatic cell nuclear transfer. There are now two ways to create new lives in mammals. One is sexual, that's sperm meets egg, and one is called asexual, that is cloning. And in both cases, you have an embryo, and if you took that embryo and implanted it into a womb, and it worked, which, as we said before, might not happen, it becomes a baby in the same way the sheep embryo, Dolly, eventually became Dolly the sheep.
Finally here, Wesley, someone says, look, you're just a Luddite. You're just anti-science, standing in the way of the hope and the promise and the progress. You have 1 minute to answer.
Thanks a lot.
You can do it. You just did human cloning in less than a minute.
Well, that's, of course, baloney. In fact, there are a lot of people beginning to understand that if we really want to get to these potential medical treatments in the soonest possible time, and given our resource issues, we got plenty to do with these adult and umbilical cord blood stem cells. Human hearts have been repaired with adult stem cells. I interviewed one fellow who went into a remission after receiving a treatment for Parkinson's with his own brain stem cells, and I detail that very thoroughly in the book. People on my side of this debate are very strongly in favor of bioscience, but we also understand that there are moral parameters and certain lines that should not be crossed. And so what we have here is not a science issue, it's a moral issue. And people who say that we should cast all moral assumptions aside, what they're looking for, I think, perhaps is a scienceocracy. Is science going to serve society or dominate it? And these are important democratic issues that each and every one of us has to address and participate in. And the way to do that is to understand the science, which is a big part of what I've done with Consumer's Guide to a Brave New World.
Folks, we're coming to you live this Sunday night. It's November the 14th. We will continue to take calls with Wesley Smith, our guest, on the other side of this hour and give away Wesley's new book, A Consumer's Guide to a Brave New World, to the best callers in the next hour. 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727, or you can email us with a question or a comment at issuesetc@kfuo.org. Be sure to tune in live in the next hour on the Internet, only on the Internet. Issuesetc.org is the website. Click on the worldwide KFUO logo. You'll be able to hear the next hour and the phone calls from our listeners right there. Call during this break, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. Without a doubt, the Brave New World is brave. The question is this bravery born of genuine compassion for all human beings, all life, and a desire to see the health and the well-being of all human beings? Or is it a bravery born of pride, wherein science decides that the ethics that surround us as moral beings can be laid aside in the name of, and one might say simply, and barely in the name of helping human beings? The big question is, who do those human beings in the Brave New World, who gets to qualify as a human being? We'll talk more about that on the other side of the break. Certainly a brave new world. Certainly something to continue paying attention to, because we'll be living in it. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen to Pastor Todd Wilkin weekly on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172. Visit us this week on the World Wide Web. Our website address, issuesetc.org. issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.